Está a ouvir um podcast da Universidade do Porto.
Olá, bem-vindos ao Library Talks, uma série de podcasts sobre a temporada de outono dos Friday Noon Seminars, que acontecem todas as sextas-feiras no Instituto de Investigação e Inovação em Saúde, I3S, Universidade do Porto. Semanalmente, vamos dar a conhecer cientistas e os seus trabalhos em áreas tão diversas como a biologia celular, imunidade, cancro, genómica ou nanotecnologia. Como é que células polarizadas colocam um fuso mitótico numa determinada posição, num determinado momento? Esta é a grande questão por trás do trabalho de Dimitris Liakopoulos, químico e biólogo molecular. E foi sobre isto que este cientista grego, a trabalhar em França, veio falar ao I3S, a convite de Jorge Ferreira, do laboratório de Hélder Maiato. O trabalho de Liakopoulos cruza-se com o da equipa de Maiato, já que ambos estão interessados nos mecanismos que regulam o posicionamento do fuso mitótico nas fases iniciais da divisão celular, conhecida como mitose. Liakopoulos usa a levedura como modelo para determinar como é que componentes do citoesqueleto da célula, como os microtúbulos e a actina, regulam a progressão da mitose e asseguram uma segregação fidedigna dos cromossomas. Este podcast foi gravado em inglês.
Thank you for being here.
And, thank you.
I would like you to explain a little bit more what is your research about.
So my research basically concerns the cytoskeleton. In fact, as the biological process is how the cells know where to divide. So how does the cell know to divide in respect to the environment? That it's, so if for example, let's say if a cell is in a tissue, if you have a cells on the skin and the skin has to grow, it just has to grow laterally and not become thicker. So how do the cells know that they should divide in a certain plane and not in another one? This is what we are researching for.
So, and a recent work has shown that both internal and external physical forces affect the connect through the cytoskeleton and affect the cell behavior. What are exactly these forces about?
The forces are generated by proteins or by complexes that are the ones that also generate forces in the real world, which is the forces that we use with our muscles. And also other proteins that we don't see, I mean, that we don't access very in real life, that are called dynames. And these have to be coordinated in order to achieve the right result in the end.
But these forces are not quite very well known, are they?
This is what the research is all about. So how these forces are, first of all, how they're generated and how they're coordinated in order to achieve the correct plane of division. And we need both biochemistry but also biophysics in order to understand how the system works.
But now the focus of this field of research has shifted for cytoskeleton networks, right?
Yes, this is true, but each lab has his own preference, so there are labs that are going more into the molecular details of that, and other labs, and also labs that are doing also modeling, are going for the bigger picture. But everyone is required, so the work from all of these are required in order to understand the system, because without the parameters that come from biochemistry, the modeling is not going to be realistic.
And you are more focused on the detail?
We are, yes, because I've studied chemistry, so I'm more in the biochemical direction, that's true.
Okay, and how do you work with the other disciplines? How easy it is? Because studying the cell behavior is involving more and more this interdisciplinary research and this relation between different disciplines. How is that working when we go deep into the cell behavior? in your opinion?
I think it's a matter of communication. So the more to put people together, that they come from different disciplines, the better they're going to communicate. So at least in the past, or where I did my studies, it was more, things were more isolated. But now more and more you have interdisciplinary institutes or research projects that bring together people from different scientific backgrounds.
So, and do you think that's beneficial? Is it better, or it is
instrumental. It's absolutely necessary. Otherwise, it won't. We're not going to be able to move forward.
And what is your favorite aspect of your research?
I like to work on the molecular details, partly because I work with an organism that permits to do so. For example, I'm working with budding yeast, which is a unicellular model, and this is very well suited in order to figure out mechanisms, molecular mechanisms in detail. There is not so much redundancy in the system there, so the system is basically more simple, and this is what permits us to go deeper. And this is my favorite. So this is my aspect. But I like the other. So you have to be informed on the other aspects as well. Nowadays, you cannot work like independently of that.
And could you explain how long-lived cytoskeleton structures may act as epigenetic determinants for cells, like cells process and cells, even cells function and cell fate?
In yeast, for example, we don't have any indications of there are not any post-translational modifications of the tubulin coat, but I can imagine that these type of modifications in high eukaryotes can serve as determinants in order to transmit information on the cytoskeleton level.
So, and could you please share with us a little bit about your research path? Could you share with us a turning point in your research career that made you think, okay, this is what I want to research about, this is what I want to do?
I think what made me choose my research, I mean, I started as a chemist and I didn't have any idea about neither molecular biology nor cell biology, because I studied pure chemistry. But because I liked biochemistry, then I moved in the biochemical field of the ubiquitin system and the ubiquitin-like modifications. But what made me choose cytoskeleton and my current research interests was actually the journal clubs that we were doing as PhD students. And this I was, because I had to acquire knowledge that I didn't have before, I was searching different subjects to present different subjects during the journal clubs that we did. And in some of them I presented a paper of Susan Strome, which was termed, it was a one-page mini review in Cell, which was called Determination of Cleavage Planes. And I found that
still
very...
You remember the title.
Yes, and I found it very, very interesting. And this was... So I encourage very much my students to do journal clubs in a way that they review a specific subject, not just a simple paper, but a bigger subject, in order for them to have an overview of what's going on. And they may be able to have the same luck as I had.
So it was almost by chance that you chose your topic.
It was by chance, but it was a chance that had to be worked.
Mm-hmm. But what triggered you while reading that paper?
The fact that the spindles were behaving differently in two different cells, because it was about the spindle positioning in the posterior and anterior cells of the first division of C. elegans. And the fact that there was a difference between the two orientations of the spindles in these two cells.
So, and is there any other scientist or paper or book, some publication that is a reference for you, or that is, or a scientist that has been a role model for you?
I mean, there are many scientists that are like this. But this was the key one. But for example, the people in yeast, okay, they're of course impressed, and they're very much influenced by the work of Kim Naismith during the cell cycle, but also by the work, I was also very much impressed and by the work of my previous, my PhD supervisor, Stefan Jentsch, and all the ubiquity in field. So there are many, many different fields, and the people that you, that are experts and the leading figures in these fields are always influencing and inspiring, I think.
Zooming in again into your work, what is so special about asymmetrical cell division?
The fact that that it's asymmetric. The fact that it's that creates from, it's a generation of diversity from a zero point. It's like a creation of two different universes from a symmetric and homogeneous environment. This goes together, of course, with polarity, mm-hmm. but this is what's fascinating about it.
What do you find fascinating about it?
It's the self-organization.
The cell organization?
Self-organization, self-organization. Of this thing. So that you have a symmetric homogeneous environment, and at some point you have to break symmetry in order to start creating diversity. And this is, I think, a fascinating...
But what triggers that... that moment that it is broken and into an asymmetrical?
It is an external event most of the time. Okay. Or, for example, in yeast, it can be, for example, there's the point of entry of sperm, like in C. elegans 4. But in yeast, it can be also a stochastic process with the generation of polarity. And this is also quite, it's kind of a biophysical thing that we have to understand how it works.
So would it be fair to say that for most models, diversity is linked to asymmetry?
Not always, but it's one way to produce diversity, of course.
In the 60s, Paul Weiss encouraged us to think of cell elements not as static, but as dynamic and dynamic elements of process. Do you agree with this, and why?
I have to think about this, but in terms of cells being together with other cells, of course, this holds true. I have also my yeast in mind, how this would apply to a single yeast cell, and it's certainly true that the cells are not bags of enzymes, so that you that are units, and they behave differently, even if they are very similar. And this may be the key to understand them as elements. Certainly, if you put them in a colony.
But you would certainly agree with him when he said that all cell life is about interactions. So, and that, this is where research has moved into.
This is what we're studying.
If you had to define a research agenda for your field study, for your field of study, what would be the bedrock for that agenda?
So what do you mean exactly with the research agenda?
The most important questions, challenges of in your field of research, more in your specific.
Yes. Is I think is one of it's to reconstitute and to understand in a quantitative fashion the interaction, the cytoskeletal interactions. So there is the microtubules, there is the intermediate filaments, and there is also the actin filaments. And in order to understand how this system functions all together in order to achieve shapes and movements in a quantitative fashion, this is a big challenge. And this is, I think, the ultimate goal of what we're looking in this cytoskeleton field. And part of it is also the spin positioning field, yes.
And in this moment, where are we in that pipeline to achieve that goal?
I think that we are I think it's at least in my understanding, it's more of a puzzle, so that each and every one of us contributes a piece of it. It's not that we are not coordinated. Okay, we are coordinated by new findings, for example, that create a kind of fashion that the people go towards one side. But I think there are pieces of the puzzle that are put together to create the bigger picture in the end.
Mm-hmm. And considering current scientific institutions, do you think that there are still room for scientists research or work on those pieces of puzzle that are out of these funding fashions?
They should be, because I think this is a very important aspect. Of course, we can promote certain aspects of science and scientific research, but we are not so smart to know what we should promote altogether. So I remind you that, for example, the CRISPR technology came from a field that was researching bacterial immunity, and this was not promoted, but it was the key to a huge progress. So we should, of course, try to implement politics in research, but I think we should not forget to find the right equilibrium between promoting certain areas and also leaving scientific freedom for progress to happen.
Okay, so you're here at I3S to give us a talk. But some of our listeners are not going to attend your talk, so could you briefly explain what are you going to talk about?
I'm going to talk about the organization of spindle function by protein-protein interactions that are not the classic ones, that can help organize the protein complexes that are on the spindle in higher order structures, and how they do so. And specifically, sumoylation is the organizer of specifically how sumoylation organizes the proteins, and further down the spindle by helping to organize the higher order complexes of the proteins that constitute the spindle.
Just to finish, if you had to give a piece of advice for a young scientist, particularly a young biochemist or a student of chemistry, what would you say?
I think this is a classic one, but it really holds true that they should follow their interests and what makes them excited, and this is the best way to have happiness and success as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you too.
Para ouvir mais, subscreva os podcasts da Universidade do Porto em notícias.up.pt.